From Nepal to North London, from Delhi to Dagenham, from the terraces to the armchair, it's an Arsenal Thing podcast. Football's in our DNA.
Welcome to It's an Arsenal Thing podcast. I'm your host Tom, and riding shotgun with me is a man who says nothing but means every word. It's Silent Dave. In a busy show, we'll look back at the non-performance at the Emirates against Graham Potter's Brighton, with the South Coast sorcerer bewitching the bare-bones Arsenal side with his magic tweak. I'll be in the gun room with Jay and Mitch to answer your emails, cast an eye over the mysterious cesspool known as social media, dissect what we saw at the Emirates and go over the latest transfer rumours in six words or less. It's been a dickens of a week. Not even a week. 6 days. All those games in hand, two supposedly weaker teams. Are Arteta's side bottling it? Who's in pole position now? And what's the reaction been like? We'll tell you later on. Also on the show, there's a musical interlude by Ian Wright from 1993, and Stuart Miltner, an avid listener, offered us the chance to pick from three notorious Arsenal traitors to add to the current squad. Those in question, Ashley Cole, Emmanuel Adebayor, and Robin Van Persie.
There can be only one.
What a week. Wins for Everton, Norwich and Leeds. Chelsea got spanked by Real Madrid and then dished out a spanking to Southampton. Unwanted Chelsea owner Fagin Abramovich has apparently made an offer to buy Valencia, according to another potential buyer for the Spanish club.
I'm afraid these don't grow on trees. You got the pickpocket or two. You got the pickpocket or two, boys.
You got the pickpocket or two.
Bit of dirty cash. Manchester United are turning into the football equivalent of Pentonville Prison Rovers, with Harry Maguire assaulting a police officer, swearing and resisting arrest, and attempted bribery in sunny Mykonos in 2019. Well, I've never seen any of that while I was over there. Mason Greenwood is awaiting the outcome of a rape charge, and Ronaldo allegedly assaulted a 14-year-old boy by smashing his mobile phone out of his hand. Tut, tut, tut. Temperamento, temperamento. The tanned football god has subsequently apologised, but the mum is... Hey, she's thinking a bit of cash. I wonder if the advertising world is about to bum him off in the same way they drop Kurt the Catman Zuma. Nah, it's not going to happen, is it? Apparently anyone with information on the incident is asked to contact Merseyside Police on their social media desk via Twitter or Facebook, quoting the reference 228, and it's of the 9th of April 2022. Is that real? Police on Facebook and Twitter? What additional information could you possibly need? It's been captured on camera. I suppose you'll have people claiming to be traumatised for a few thousand quid. That always helps solve the problem, doesn't it? Makes you feel better.
It's an Arsenal thing, it's an Arsenal thing. Believe it or not, it's an Arsenal thing. With football and transfers, you know you'll bring. You're listening to It's an Arsenal Thing.
Now then, let's cut to the chase. Sadly, Arsenal dropped another 3 points in a lacklustre performance against the Brighton side without a win in 8 games. They hadn't scored in 9, but strangely, they came up with 2 magical goals in what was, for us, virtually a guaranteed 3 points. That's what most of us thought. In truth, this was an ugly affair for all but 6 minutes as the Gunners tried to reignite their top four ambitions. A curious team selection which also exposes how short we are in quality, numbers and depth. But there are 8 games left, 24 points begging, and if we beat United and Spuds, we can almost guarantee a top four. It's the Arsenal way, people. That's what we do. Three massive games ahead, Southampton, Chelsea, Spuds and West Ham, which could define the running. In Arsenal news, Wolves midfielder Ruben Neves is emerging as one of Arsenal's top summer transfer targets for around £50 to £60 million. Marseille boss Georges Sampaoli claims that Matteo Guendouzi is en route to become one of the game's best midfielders as the Frenchman edges closer to his exit from the Emirates. Sideshow Bob hasn't played since the Brighton Strangler incident back in June 2020. Transfer insider Dean Jones has told Give Me Sport that Arsenal could actually sign Everton ace Richarlison, but Brown believes a move for Calvert-Lewin is more likely. 60 million, apparently. That's becoming the in figure, isn't it, for the summer? Arsenal are still said to be interested in Aston Villa midfielder Douglas Luiz as the Gunners look to bolster their midfield options. Pretty much expected, the Gunners are set to take a hit on the sale of Nicolas Pepe by selling him for as little as 25 million. Mourinho might be interested. Edu is chasing the signature of Atletico Madrid striker João Félix, and Jorge Mendes may push to get him out of the Spanish capital. Atletico were allegedly keen to recoup some of the money on Felix, having splashed out a staggering £120 million to sign him in 2019. Felix is yet to score more than 10 goals in a season for Atletico, and Arsenal seemingly believe they can get more out of him. Darwin Nunes, recently thought to be a certainty to arrive in North London, is suddenly on the radar of Manchester United and Chelsea. It's not much of a choice, is it? Barcelona have placed Gabriel at the top of their transfer list. Xavi wants to sign a left-sided centre-back ahead of next season. The 24-year-old is under contract until 2025, so Arsenal are absolutely under no pressure to sell. But clearly, joining Barcelona, particularly now that Xavi is at the helm, is a very attractive proposition. Let's have a quote of the month. It belongs to Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Never slow to speak his mind even when it's empty. The Zlat said, FC Barcelona's women team can beat Manchester United men's team, even if they're all pregnant. You've got to love him for that, even if it's a tiny bit sexist. But we'll let it slide for this pod. In sick bay, we currently have Thomas Partey with an injured thigh, apparently it's muscle. He could be out for weeks and is still being assessed by the medical team. It's all those long shots, isn't it, into Rose Ed? Only joking, Thomas. Get well soon. Kieran Tierney is out with a knee injury which required surgery. There were images splashed all over social media of him with a heavily strapped left leg, sitting on a hospital bed smiling. He's out for the rest of the season, but we look forward to a speedy recovery. And Tomiyasu is still unavailable with a muscle injury, but we need him back soon. What's Japanese for hurry up, Dave? Quick, get on Google. Come on. What's that on your whiteboard? It's just lines and dots. Oh, right, of course, I'm with you. Yeah, Japanese. Pepe is still comfortable on the bench, but is suffering from one-foot syndrome. So, key injuries at the back, which will cause fans palpitations and sleepless nights after the Palace and Brighton showings. Arsenal have scored 43 goals in 27 Premier League matches so far this season, the fewest netted by any of the top seven. I'm just throwing this out there. Xhaka at left back. Madness! Spanish Michael, what were you thinking of? Que estabas pensando? Which is basically, what were you thinking of? While we're on the subject, Ben White could have been right back. Holding and Gabriel could have been in the middle. And Joel Lopez could have been on the left. That looks good to me right now. Did you hear that Piers Morgan and Lee Dixon had a bit of a Twitter spat? And here's the post and the reply. Piers Morgan said, breaking, Aubameyang scores again for Barcelona. His 10th goal in 14 games since Arsenal gave him away for free. Now officially one of the worst decisions in managerial history. Piers, really? You're really making yourself look rather silly. Enough. Get over it. He was disruptive at the club. The club is always bigger. You know that.
You just got owned, you noob. You just got owned, motherfucker. You just got owned, you noob. You just got owned. motherfucker. You just got owned.
Now, Arsenal came up with something good on Twitter. They claim that Arsenal's goals in the last seven games come to 9. Aubameyang in the last seven games come to 9. What does that prove? Not a lot. We're better off without him, to be honest. I know we've lost a couple of matches, but come on. Lazio News 24 claims that the Gunners now want former Chelsea manager Maurizio Sarri as their next boss. I don't think so, do you?
It's an Arsenal thing, it's an Arsenal thing. Believe it or not, it's an Arsenal thing. With football and transfers, you know you'll bring. You're listening to It's an Arsenal Thing.
It's time to enter the gun room for a natter.
Hello, people. Welcome to the gun room. We're trying to make the best out of it. It's very hard, as you probably understand yourselves. Jay, Mitch, how are you doing? Let's start with Jay first. How are you, mate?
Yeah, all good. All good. Disappointed, but yeah.
Yeah. As I said to you earlier on, we'll go through the goals. We won't really get too involved with the match because it's the second one on the bounce, so we don't really want to go there. Mitch, anything exciting happening in your life? Let's hear the bit that you just told me about and no one's privy to.
I have something exciting coming up that I'll be publishing with Pain in the Arsenal. With a player who played for Arsenal in the 80s and 90s, which is very exciting.
Are you just going to be cagey or do we get a clue?
Yeah, no, I'm going to be cagey because I don't have it for sure yet. So I don't want to have to answer for it later if I'm too spot on about it.
Yeah, you're just as well to do that. As I said, we'll talk about the match briefly. I don't intend to dwell on it too much because I haven't got over it. Instead, I want to focus on the reasons for why there was a massive knee-jerk reaction on social media afterwards and on some podcasts, but I won't bother naming the podcast in particular. But I was thinking to myself, it's a seasoned podcast, it's a seasoned podcaster, and I was thinking, where's the objectivity? You know, there's still 8 games left, as we'll touch on. There's plenty to play for. And it was all very depressing. So 2 defeats in a row, 1 away to Palace, the other to Brighton. 8 games left, 8 games without a win, Brighton. 9 games without a goal. Was this loss worse than the Palace defeat, Jay?
Was it worse? Yeah, you'd have to say it was worse. It was at home. I think both the defeats were unexpected. Right, I don't think we were expecting to slip up in both the games. I think most of us saw the Brighton game as a pretty good, a decent team to play against after a bad defeat. Right, you know, they were struggling, but we never got going, did we? It was really, really poor. I think. It's crazy, isn't it? I said this to you, Tom, didn't I, earlier? Just how the Arsenal just affect your mood and just, you know, like, it was a game that we should have won, no doubt. The Palace game, like we discussed last week, it's one of the tougher away games of the season, you know, outside the top sort of 2 or 3 teams. Brighton at home, you know, they're a good side and they've got good players, but I still expected us to beat them. And it was a surprise. The performance was a surprise. Our lack of urgency was a surprise, which I'm sure we'll get into later on. But yeah, really disappointed after that. And all the old worries come back, don't they? All the old sort of doubts that you have about, excuse me, certain areas of the team, they all creep back in after quite a weak, toothless performance. So, yeah, well, disappointed.
We'll run through the team in a minute and we'll run through all the stats and all that sort of thing. Mitch, let's go to you. Are you still feeling as sick as we are about it?
Weirdly, I was at the game, so it was a little bit of a different feel than it was the first time I was at a match because we won 2-0 at Brighton against Brentford the first time I was at a match. And so it was a way different energy obviously coming out of a loss, but I was weirdly less disappointed than I was like coming out of a lot of different games. It may have just been because the energy was a lot higher at the end of the game, so I was kind of feeding off of that. Like, especially after the Odegaard goal, is like the loudest the stadium was, despite having the fewest fans at that part of the game. And so there was like that chance that we might be able to snatch something out of the game, despite not playing well for most of it. And I came out of the game like not feeling awful. Like after the Palace game, I'm like, oh, I'm not checking Twitter for the rest of the night. Like, oh, that was awful. And then like after the Brighton game, I was like, yeah, that wasn't great, but like, you know, not the end of the world. So I do think it was a worse loss than the Palace game, but weirdly, I didn't feel it as much.
Let's look at the stats. Arsenal 65% possession, Brighton 35%, shots 20 for Arsenal. Didn't feel like that. 8 for Brighton. Shots on target, 4 for Arsenal, 3 for Brighton. Corners 11 for the Gunners and 2 for Brighton. Fouls 12. This is where it gets interesting. Quite a chewy old fouling match. 12 for Arsenal, 19 for Brighton. As I say, let's have a look at the team selection. It was Ramsdale, Cedric Suarez, White, Gabriel, Xhaka, Odegaard, Sambi Lokonga, Saka, Smith-Rowe, Martinelli and Lacazette. Jay, how did you feel when you saw that team sheet? Any alarm bells?
No, well, not really. No, I still felt we had more than enough to get a result. And obviously, it was tweeted out that Xhaka was at left back, which not ideal, but I didn't have too many issues with the team at all. As we've said so many times, we've got so few options. And I think, look, the Xhaka at left back thing has been heavily criticised, obviously with Thomas Partey missing, and I get that. And everybody's, you know, it's been analysed, been criticised to the nth degree, but I can kind of see why Arteta did it. You know, he obviously trusts Granit, doesn't he? And he's one of the very few players that just seems to be, well, he's one of the first names on the team sheet, isn't he? And Arteta took a bit of a gamble putting him at left back, and it didn't really pay off, did it? Because as soon as Granit moved into the more centrally in the second half, we did look a bit better, didn't we? You know, and No alarm bells. I still thought, and I still think now that we had enough quality to get a result. But you know, obviously, it wasn't meant to be. Obviously Partey missing, and then taking Xhaka out the middle of the park. We had nothing going through the centre, did we? You know, Lokonga hasn't played for so long, and he was attempting to drive forward like Tom Partey. There was a few occasions where, especially in the second half, managed to get through, but we just had no penetration through the middle, did we? Practically all through the game. And but no alarm bells.
What about you, Mitch? What would you have changed with that side, looking at it as it was?
I was kind of excited. Like, I don't like Xhaka at left back. I don't think he's a bad left back, to be fair. I just think the positional value of him in the center of the park is so much greater than him at left back. I think it takes him out of the game a bit. And then Stamby didn't do fantastic in the single pivot, but I'm not putting that all on him. I was a little excited to see Smith-Rowe and Odegaard again as eights. I'm very curious about how that can set up in the future. Unfortunately, every time we've seen it, it's been disappointing. Like, I don't think that I've seen a good performance from either of them any time that they've been lined up together as eights, which is really disappointing because on paper, it seems like it could be a really good combination if we have enough trust in in whoever's playing the six to hold down the midfield practically by themselves. And I have a little more trust in Thomas Partey to be able to do that than Sambi. But even when Thomas has played as a lone six with them in front, it hasn't really gone great. So I was a little excited to see that. Unfortunately, it didn't work out. And I do think it was a bad tactical mistake by Mikel Arteta. I also worry about like what it does to Tavares's like confidence, because I feel like he's a big confidence player. We talked about this a bit last week, but I really think that, and I really hope that this is what we're doing against Southampton, that we kind of do that, like a little bit of a tactical tweak, go back to a double pivot, have Xhaka and Sambi as the sixes in the middle, and have Tavares and Cedric playing high and wide as fullbacks. I think that that's the best tactically from our team. Tavares has had some rough games, but like we need to put our trust in like a young player like him who we've seen play really well, especially in a role that he's like can thrive in. If Xhaka is in that center defensive midfield role with Sambi, not only is Sambi going to be better, but Tavares is going to be better because he's going to have that outlet in the middle of Xhaka who's secure on the ball. And then Xhaka can also slip into that left back role when Tavares goes up, and he can combine really nicely. I think one of the biggest things that people were talking about earlier in the season when Tavares had a really good run in games was he adds more variety going forward than Tierney did. Like what we've seen the last couple of years, Tierney is something he's really good at, where he's really good at getting to the byline, getting a nice cross across. But Tavares was a little bit more like had more variety in what he was doing. He maybe would cut inside a little bit more and had more creative ways to try to penetrate defenses. And I think we, by having the defensive support rely more on Xhaka from midfield, it'll give Tavares more license to go forward, which is where he thrives. He needs to improve defensively without a doubt. That's something he needs to get better in his game, but there needs to be trust in him. We signed him to be Tierney's backup. We need Tierney's backup right now. And he's 21 years old. We can't be like trying to kill his confidence because he's had some bad games, but he's not a bad player. He's far from a bad player. And so I do think it was a wrong tactical choice by Mikel Arteta, but I can totally understand why he would try this kind of tactical choice in a game with a Brighton team that hadn't won in 8 matches. If there's a time to try anything, it was against that team. It did not work. We felt the consequences, and that's unfortunate. But I do put a little bit on Mikel for the game. Obviously, I still back Mikel. I'm not like Arteta out now. I'm not entirely changing my tune.
Oh, there's a lot of that.
If you're gonna praise Mikel when he does when we're on good form, you have to criticize him when he does something wrong, or else you're just calling him a god, and that's not the case. So I do think it was a wrong choice by Mikel. I wasn't upset about it at the time, but I do think it was a wrong choice ultimately.
Right, let's bring objectivity into the lives of Arsenal supporters, because I said to someone, the reason we don't do a podcast straight afterwards is that sometimes it's a bit emotional, isn't it? And you can't really get the facts on the table. You're so upset about the game, and it was a stinker. It was a howler. It was awful. And there were extenuating circumstances, though, because if you look at it, you've got Tierney missing, you've got Tomiyasu missing, and you've got Partey missing. And then when you put those back in the side, it seems strong. There's that strength. You feel confident. But when you've got these other bit part players or, you know, make do's, it doesn't feel that strong. We are missing fundamental players at a crucial point of the season. And some people don't get it. Jay?
Yeah, this was always going to happen with having such a thin squad. You know, we were going to hit this rough patch after January at some point, weren't we? You know, not strengthening. We were going to hit this. We all knew that. We all knew, you know, with such a young squad, we were going to hit the occasional sort of, you know, difficult performance. We're going to also experience, you know, a few injuries. It's just a shame that both of our fullbacks, our first choice fullbacks, are out and our best midfielders out. You know, and you know, we do have, I wouldn't say strength, but in other areas of the pitch, we'd be able to cope with, let's say, God forbid, Bukayo Saka gets injured, we can play Pepe. We haven't got the same, you know, sort of level of quality, have we, in the three positions that we're missing? And it is massively affecting us. Saying that, you know, could we have done more in January? That's that's an argument that a lot of people have been sort of throwing out on social media.
You sure you haven't seen the emails?
could we have strengthened more? And that's an argument I think we all wanted us to. Obviously, you only want to strengthen your squad with players that actually improve things. But for me, you know, there were definitely areas that we could have improved on. And the squad just looks absolutely paper thin now, doesn't it? And I agree with Mitch, you know, like Nuno does have to come in. We need that balance to the defence. We need we need Xhaka in the middle. And I mean, Tom, you know, my view on Xhaka, it's a sad state of affairs when you're relying on him. For me, you know, he's a decent midfielder, but we need him in the middle. And it was just so evident, like I said earlier, that when he returned to the centre of the park in the second half, we did improve slightly, I suppose.
I haven't got the stats with me, but he was the most progressive ball player in the second half.
That doesn't surprise me.
So we
you're playing against, I don't know. This was a Brighton side, like we said, it hadn't won for God knows how many games, and they must have. I mean, I think me and Mitch were talking about this on Twitter. We're so predictable. You know, when we lose Thomas Partey, we lose that ability to pick the ball up in certain areas of, say, you know, the deep line midfield role or the central area of the pitch, and be able to break through with the ball and be able to carry the ball out and bring the wide men in. When you lose that, we just seem to get slower, right? Our play slows down and it goes back and it goes sideways and it goes into Xhaka. I'm not saying he's certainly not to blame for, well, he's just part of the team, but he's certainly not to blame for the bad performance. But it was just slow and we became predictable. And we've got to find a way to maybe be less predictable against Southampton, because I think we're just so easy to defend against and we're so easy to set up against. Brighton must have just saw us. You know, after the first 10 minutes, you could see that we weren't at the races, and they just jumped on that, didn't they? And they've got certain players in certain areas that were quick, and they just look, you know, they just had a field day in certain, you know, certain parts of the field. And it was a tough watch. I don't know. It's I can understand certain parts of social media where people are concerned about, you know, I wouldn't say where our next win's coming from, because that's just too crazy. But with the running that we've got, you know, Southampton, we need to see a reaction, don't we, against Southampton? There has to be. We can't go into this with the same. I'd like to see from Mikel just something a little bit different, where he's looked at the performance on what day was it now? Saturday, Sunday, whenever it was, Saturday. And he's looked at the Palace game, he's looked at the Brighton game, and he's seen that maybe we do need to bring in Nuno, and we've got to abandon this Granit Xhaka trial at left back. Or, you know, like Mitch said, he needs to play in the position he was brought into play, and we need to try maybe something different up front, and leave Granit in the middle. I don't know what you guys think.
Tactically as well, in the last two games, Ben White hasn't been able, and Gabriel as well, haven't been able to get forward to bring that ball out to their full potential, especially Ben White. He is a baller. He can get you up the field.
Yeah, that's been clearly a tactical choice by both Vieira and Potter. I mean, no one knows better than Graham Potter in the Premier League what Ben White can do on the ball. So it was not a mistake that we did not see Ben White on the ball very much, being able to bring it forward. That was clearly a tactical choice by Brighton and by Crystal Palace. Crystal Palace always press high. That's kind of how they've played. And Brighton definitely pressed Ben White. They didn't let him have that much space to run into. And it was definitely a good choice to be. Like as a fan, you kind of feel the energy a lot, like when you're at the stadium. So it was like we'd have the ball, and then Ben White would get the ball, and then wouldn't be able to do anything, and then pass back to Gabriel, and then you just kind of like have this feeling as like like with all the fans, you're like, oh, like you could have done like something like better. Like obviously, technically, passing the ball to your center back partner when you don't have a good look is a good choice typically. But like when you're already down as a fan, you get kind of restless. You're like, do we have the patience for this kind of thing? And Brighton did a really good job of kind of shutting that down, shutting the variability down with Ben White.
Jay, what you got on your television? What match have you got playing in the background?
We have Real Madrid v Chelsea.
Oh, how's it going?
Chelsea winning 1-0.
No.
Mason Mount.
Back to ourselves. Arteta said we lacked courage. Trawling the cesspool known as social media. Quite a lot of the terms were repetitive. Bottled, popped up quite a bit. The fact was, we wasn't solid at the back. We weren't combative in the midfield. And we were just blunt at the top end. Which leads me to, are we scared? Are we mentally jaded by these two defeats? Are we strong enough to now go forward with these four games, massive, massive games, to seize the initiative? Mitch?
I hope so. I thought that we understood that we were getting a strong message in this team's mentality when we came back against Wolves. I thought that that was like that performance right there, to like go down 1-0 against a team that does not concede when they're leading, and then not only get something out of the game but win the game. That was a performance that was like a mentally tough performance, and I don't think that this team has done worse than losing two games. We started the season very poorly. We've lost games this season. We lost two arguably tougher matches because earlier in the year against United and Everton, one after the other, that I would say probably were worse because we should have won. Like, we played better. Like, these are just bad performances. You can get over bad performances. The mental toughness was losing to Everton and Man United when you literally had leads. These were just bad performances. I'm not worried about the team's mentality. If we don't have a good performance against Southampton, then we maybe start talking about that. But as of right now, I do not think that it's the mentality that's letting us down. I think it's just poor performances. We're losing key players. We need to adapt and overcome that if we're going to make top four.
Jay, on the surface of it, it makes the United and Spurs game incredibly more difficult, doesn't it? We've got our next four away games. Our next four games, three of them are away, one are at home. So the pressure is really on, isn't it? With Spurs just nipping in front of us, it tends to make everything more dreadful, doesn't it?
I mean, I think the benefit of having the youngest squad in the league is the ability to just brush off results better than more experienced squads. The majority of these players haven't been through this. It's new. All of this is new to them. A lot of them. I don't think anybody. We can't underestimate the loss of Thomas Partey. Just. How much that's affected us. We were so reliant upon him, and which is for me incredibly worrying, because I haven't seen enough yet in Sambi to suggest that he's ready to fill his boots yet. I think we'll surprise. We've been consistent this season. We've had these spells where we've had a couple of bad results, and then it's followed by a period of good form. And I do believe that we'll bounce back on Saturday or whenever the Southampton game is, and I think we'll see at home against Man United, I'd still fancy us. Against Spurs away, that's a tough game, but it's not Spurs. I mean, the Villa game was random. Everything they hit went in.
they're hitting some form, but they're also incredibly fortunate in these games, you know. And it's a tough game away at Spurs, but it's not beyond us, you know. I just think we have to, Mikel has to find a set team like we discussed earlier, a balance, get as much balance as we can in the side and just stick with it. And nothing's over yet, you know. Spurs have nipped in front, but and, you know, there's been a few bad results from, on our side, but it's certainly not over. We're in a good position. We've just got to trust, you know, the form we've seen. We've beaten some good teams this season, you know, and we're in a position where nobody really expected us to be in. I think all three of us have said, none of us expected us to be where we are now, fighting for potential Champions League, and it's not lost. So, it's not great seeing Spurs. I honestly thought they would slip up against Villa, but I mean, what a crazy
wasn't
game.
For want of trying, was it? Villa were at them, and yeah. Lloris played a blinder. I mean, he really was. He had four pairs of arms.
And Spurs have they've got the strikers. You know, they've got the thing that we haven't got. They've got world-class strikers. Hey, you know, nothing new there. They've had Son and Kane have been there for years, and they're as good as anything in the league. And I mean, so many people have said it. That will most probably be the difference between the two teams at the end of the season. They might just have the firepower and we won't, unless something miraculously changes at the end, you know, in the running from our point of view.
If anyone's going to the Man United match, keep your phone in your pocket because you know what happens, don't you? Just give you that little tip. Obviously, social media exploded. There was criticism, knee-jerk reactions and all the rest of it. Keywords, lack of urgency, lack of pace, lack of cutting edge. Let's go to those goals. I don't really want to wax lyrical about somebody else's goals, but they were two crackers. And there is an element where we slipped up. And it seemed like we didn't go towards the ball. We left massive holes. We'll talk about our chances. Gabriel headed wide early on, didn't he?
Big chance, huge chance.
That would have changed the picture.
Should have scored. What is he? Yard, maybe 2 yards out? Has to score. Absolutely has to score.
Kind of head just went the wrong way, didn't it? Tossard got the lead, 28 minutes. Mitch, take us through that. As I say, they were both good goals.
I have not watched the game after I was there. I don't remember what the goals were.
Well, both of them were cracking strikes. And the first goal, the ball was played across the pitch and back to the 18-yard box. And Tossard just had acres of space, didn't he? They just all stood back. They were all committed and they were all in a line back towards the goal. It was shameful. I tell you what, when you do your Sunday football and all that sort of thing, you see that on a regular basis, but you don't often see it in the Premiership. It was dire. Jay, you got anything to add to it?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was no surprise that the problem came down Shaka's side, you know. And when it was cut back, I mean, Trossard was on his own, wasn't he? There was no one within. I mean, he was in the middle, sort of 10 yards out. Nobody within a 3 yard radius. Yeah, he finished it well, but it was an easy finish. Awful defending. It was like really.
He had so much space. He could have put table and chairs out and started cooking off a barbecue. That's how much space he had. It was absolutely shameful. As I say, the defence just disintegrated. Smith Rowe had a blocked half chance. And again, it's all fractions, isn't it? If that goes in, you're back in the picture. Let's talk about the Martinelli offside. 4 minutes. We're talking shins and shoelaces again, aren't we? And it's really pissing me off. What did you make of it, Mitch?
I mean, in the stadium, it was very frustrating. And I think the biggest thing is, like, and we've all seen, like, the picture of, like, is he offside, is he not? I think the biggest thing is, like, if you're VAR, you're looking for a clear and obvious error. Is there a clear and obvious error if it takes you 4 or 5 minutes to come up with it? No, there isn't. So if you like literally can't tell, like if it takes you that long to draw the lines and figure out if he's offsides or not, then there's not a clear and obvious error. Therefore, you can't overturn it with VAR. I feel like that's the way you have to look at it, because I feel like there's so many different angles you can look at this, and he looks onside or offside for every single angle. Like there's, it's a tough look. And I don't think there's clear and obvious error. Like if it takes you that long to try to figure it out, there's no clear and obvious error. Therefore you can't rule it out.
Well, here's an interesting one from former ref Mark Halsey. While we're on the subject, he said, what frustrates everybody is the length of time taken. You're looking at it for that long, then maybe there's an argument that it should just be a goal. It might make sense to introduce a time limit on these decision-making processes. He has a point, doesn't he? Because if it's blatant, and if it's a blatant offside, you'll pick it up real quick. But 4 or so minutes, I mean, you know, there's another quote here. I'll just give you this while we're on the subject. Keith Hackett, friend of the show, said he's still convinced that when the ball was played, he was onside. The Brighton player nearest the goal line playing him on, it's such a tight call. The benefit of the doubt should go to the scorer. So Mike Halsey says it was offside. Keith Hackett, really experienced referee from yesteryear, he says the benefit of doubt should have gone to the scorer. Anything else to add to it? Because I looked at it a few times and I was like, I can't see it.
At the time, I thought it was a really, really bad decision. At no point, I know Mitch said he hasn't watched it back, but at no point when they were showing the replays, did it ever show that he was clearly offside? It was never shown. It's a tough one, but at the end of the day, it took that long for the VAR to overrule the referee when there was no lines drawn on the screen. There was nothing to show definitively that Martinelli was offside. And I thought it was a really, really bad decision. And it does also, you know, these things always happen to us, don't they? They always happen to the Arsenal. They just seem to, and they never seem to even out. I just thought it was a really, really, really bad decision.
But again, I mean, it's the timing, isn't it, Jake? Because if we had gone in 1-1,
this is it. This is what I was about to say. We absolutely stunk the place out for 45 minutes, deserved to be behind. But we know, all three of us know, that football, you don't always get what you deserve. So we should have gone in 1-1. And it was a crap decision. It really was a bad decision. Really bad.
Let's get on to the second half. It was better, but it wasn't by much, was it? The defence was half asleep and pulled hither and thither at times. Mwepu, after 66 minutes. Jay, what can you tell us about that goal? Another spanker, and another one where we sat back and didn't pick up the pace.
Yeah, they Brighton were attacking down the left-hand side, and I can't remember which player it is, broke through. It was like a 1-2, I think, and he cut it back, and it was a great finish. I thought at the time, should Ramsdale have done a little bit better? I thought maybe he could have saved it, but he did hit it well. Finished it in the bottom corner.
God, it was low and hard. Game wasn't over. It must have come through a crowd of bodies, and he must have got the last glimpse of it.
And we'd had no, I mean, even up to that point, we hadn't really tested their goal, had we? It was just, we deserved to be 2 down, and it was just game over. I never thought we were going to come back. So yeah, it was a good finish. He's a good player, that Mwepu. He seems to be a pretty decent player, and he played well on the day. So yeah, just
let's talk about something cheery, because there was a couple of efforts that were amazingly cheery. Let's put the smile back on. Lokonga released a real belter. I mean, real purpose, powering forward, proper unleashed it, and then you had Nketiah involved in hitting the woodwork. He's our woodwork specialist, isn't he? Now he should have his own classes. Hit the woodwork twice. And then we got our sort of consolation prize, Odegaard. Awesome goal, a bit of a deflection off Welbeck. Mitch, what did you see? Take us through it.
Just an awesome goal that I unfortunately haven't seen all over my Twitter timeline because we lost the game. I haven't seen it after I saw it live because no one has like been posting about it, because what is there to celebrate? Because it didn't actually matter. It put life back into the stadium, which was fun. at the very least got 10 minutes of like a stadium that was like amped and wanting and like cheering on Arsenal, because like I felt like the entire stadium was kind of like lethargic from the beginning, from kickoff. There wasn't the same energy that I
would. Did it feel nervous, Mitch? Did it feel like there was anxiety?
No, I don't think it felt nervous.
Because we do suffer from that.
I think it was more lethargic. I think it was less nervous, more lethargic. I don't know. My seat was like the first time I went, I was like right behind one of the goals, so I was like in a standing section. So I feel like I may have like just felt more involved in the game, and where I was in the upper deck, we're sitting, like less involved in the game. But I feel like the stadium as a whole was quieter. I feel like there was times before Brighton even scored that the away section was louder than the rest of the stadium, which is just not what you want to hear. I feel like typically the Emirates has been really loud this season. I don't think we've really experienced that much where the away fans are louder than us. We've outsung teams at their own grounds before the season. But I don't know, the crowd felt lethargic, and I feel like that may have had like felt onto the players a little bit. But like, I mean, I'm not blaming the crowd for a loss, but it was a great Odegaard goal. Bummer that
that'd be a low blow, wouldn't it? Blaming the old crowd.
Yeah, I'm gonna blame myself for that loss. That was on me, guys.
Right, let's go for our bullet points on this performance, just so everyone's aware. Xhaka is not a good left back. Mitch, who would you put in that left back for sure from the next game, Southampton?
Tavares, 100%. And I don't think Xhaka is a bad left back, but I think he's a way better center midfielder. And the hurt of not having him there and having him at left back instead just hurts us as a whole.
Yeah.
Agree with that. Time to rest Lacazette. I mean, he was pretty anonymous from what I saw. Nketiah, yes, knocking on the door in that performance.
I mean, that header was superb. You know, that goes in, and it's one of the goals of the season. You know, and we're back in the game. You know, but the thing about Lacazette that I think we all liked was when he came back into the team. You know, he looked fired up. He was holding the ball up. He was affecting games in a positive way. He really isn't doing that at the moment. You know, he's, I mean, anybody at any level that's played football at any level has played with players that run around a lot, looking busy, but don't actually do anything. You know, he's running around at the moment, and what really frustrates me about him is how deep he drops. You know, he's dropping deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper until, I'm sure, on Mwepu's goal, he was in the Arsenal box. You know, he's our striker, he's our centre forward. We need him further forward, but he's dropping deeper because he knows in himself that he's not affecting games. So he's coming in, he's trying to find the ball, he's trying to do what he thinks the fans and the manager wants him to do. But you're not telling me that Mikel wants him to drop that deep. I'm not going to believe that. You know, we need to see something different. We have to see something. If we persist with somebody who doesn't shoot, he doesn't create anything, and he just looks, he looks lost at this level at the moment. And I personally, and I mean, I know me and Mitch were chatting about this the other day on Twitter, just need to see something different, whether that's Martinelli up front, whether it's Eddie, who, to be fair to him, has done well. Like I said to you before, I'm not totally convinced by him, but at the end of the day, he's the last few cameo performances that he's put in, he's done really well, and he's created chances, and he's taken shots, and he's hit the crossbar, and he's looked like scoring. That, you know, I think a lot of people want to see Martinelli down the middle, even Pepe, maybe, I don't know. But I just think, like I said earlier, I just think we need to become a little bit less predictable, and we need, and with Lacazette up front, you know, these defenders must love it. You know, they must love defending against him. The fact that ultimately, he's not going to push the defenders back. He drops so deep that they just have the freedom just to bully him. And he looks so lightweight, doesn't he? And I mean, this isn't an attack on Lacazette. I just think he could do with a little bit of a period out of the team, you know, because at the moment, he looks too comfortable. He just, I don't know, he's very frustrating. And ultimately, if we're going to get into Europe, you know, hopefully it's the Champions League, but if it's not, we're going to need our strikers to start scoring, because the goals from, we can't always rely on the younger kids, can we? He's our main striker at the moment, and we need him to start delivering. But at the minute, I'd take him out of the team. I'd either go with Martinelli or Eddie up front. He's probably going to go with Eddie. But I mean, against Southampton, if we see Lacazette and we don't get a result, it's another thing to attack Arteta about.
We've got various problems to solve, that's for sure. And Mikel's probably going to have a really big period of sitting down and trying to plan out where he can find some impetus from, really. Say we go into the Southampton game and we get a couple of goals, we're in a healthy position, we look like we've got control of the game. Is there a case to be had for starting to bleed some more of these youngsters, Amari Hutchinson, Miguel Aziz? Or do you think it's too much too soon? Mitch? Shaking away, baby.
I think we're too reliant on our academy as it is. Like, Smith Rowe and Saka have been absolute keys in our starting lineup, obviously, in their hail end. But I mean, as much as I would love to see Amari Hutchinson come into the team sooner rather than later, because that kid's gonna be a star. He is so good. And I love Miguel Aziz. I don't think any of them are ready. I think they're just filling bodies on the bench right now. I don't think there's many game states in which they will get introduced into a Premier League match right now. I think a really desperate time would have to be like Elneny and Sambi, and just every midfielder ahead of Aziz has to pull a hammy and warm up for Aziz to be considered as first sub for any position, or same with Hutchinson. Like, as much as I'd love to see these guys, like Charlie Patino, super talented player, scored in his debut against Sunderland, really awesome, did not have a good time against Nottingham Forest in that loss. I don't think it would be smart long-term or short-term to put these youngsters throw them into the Premier League fire. Unless we're up like 5-6-0, which I don't see us scoring that many goals in one game anytime soon, with the production we're getting out of our forwards. So I don't think it's a good idea. I think that they need a season or two. I mean, one bright side, if we don't make Champions League, is that we can see those players in the group stage of the Europa League. You can't really say that as much with the group stages of the Champions League. But totally with the Crusaders of the Europa League, that's when like Saka got his debut. That's when Smith Rowe got to get some minutes. That's we're able to see Balogun and those kind of players during those Europa League group stages. So that's a silver lining if we do end up not making Champions League. But I don't want to see them in Premier League matches. I mean, I do, but like, I don't think it'd be a good idea. As much as I would love for our more academy guys to come into the team and start succeeding.
I think it's down to the individual players as well, isn't it? Because Saka is a different kettle of fish. I mean, mentally, sure. Physically, he was able to be cut loose. Cesc Fabregas years ago, when did he make his debut? He was about 16, 17, wasn't he? They cut him loose and he excelled. So it really does depend on the individual, but as you say, it could burn that potential and kind of set them back a bit. Jay, who was your man of the match for Brighton? Because I don't think we merit one for Arsenal.
No, yeah, I thought Mwepu played well. He did play well. I thought, you know, in a funny way, I thought I think it was Bissouma in the middle. You know, you highlighted that there was 19 fouls, you know, in the second half, the central midfield of Brighton did a really good job of sort of tactically shutting any sort of revival down. They were just basically clever fouls, you know, and they were getting away with them, and they did a really good job. And you got to give it to Brighton manager's name? What's his name?
He's Graham Potter.
Potter. You've got to give it to Potter because they managed the game out perfectly. You know, if it wasn't for a fluke goal, freak goal, I mean, it must have been nice seeing it in the stadium. Absolutely no doubt. And me and my son, we were watching it together, and we were like, that's a great goal. But ultimately, without a fluke goal, we probably wouldn't have scored, you know, and they shut us down. And I know it's not particularly difficult these days with the strikers we've got, but I thought the central midfield of Brighton were really good in, and it's the kind of thing that we've been pretty good at, you know. Partey and Xhaka have been a really good, positive part of this season. I was just quite impressed with Brighton from that point of view. But yeah, give it to him, Mwepu. His goal was good, and he was a live wire, wasn't he? He's quick, and he's a good player. They've got some good players, Brighton. They have. They've got some strong players. So yeah, I
totally agree with you, Mitch. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think they were both really good. I thought Cucurella was also really good as the left back. I mean, we haven't heard much from Odegaard and Saka the last couple of games. And we know how dangerous they can be when they can really combine. I thought he was really good at shutting him down as well as going forward. He put some really nice balls in the box and combined really nicely. But yeah, I agree with everything Jay said.
Yeah, I've got my notes here from Mwepu. Assured and progressive, real genuine quality. And he was everywhere, wasn't he? He was involved in most good things. 8 games left, 24 points to play for. As we said, those key games against United and Spurs, that could change the entire complexion of the battle for top four. It's still doable, isn't it, Jay?
Of course it is. Of course. So much more football to be played. Spurs are not the finished article. They've got a good manager, but look, if I'm going to clutch at some straws, you live in hope that their luck is running out, like that, you know, that they're due a defeat, that, you know, they should have slipped up against Villa. It was, you know, they've got two really superb strikers. Let's hope one or both of them get injured. And you live in hope that the Man United revival never happens. And because they look, you know, as bad as we've been in the last two games, I mean, come on, United are in an absolutely dreadful state. I've got a good friend of mine who's a Man United fan, and he was saying that it looks like Ten Hag is going to accept the job. So maybe if it becomes public news that Ten Hag is taking the job next season, maybe, I don't know.
It was confirmed by Ornstein today. And
right. Okay, so maybe there'll be some kind of reaction from the United players. I don't know. You live in hope that that's not the case, but everything's still to play for. Absolutely. Like, look, it can all change. Yeah, from week to week. This end of the season, this is precisely why young players at the moment, our youngsters, you know, the your Hutchinsons and the like, they won't be introduced because it's a pressure cooker. It's absolutely crazy from week to week. You know, we were only talking after the Aston Villa game just how good a position we were in, you know, and you're looking at the Palace and the Brighton games as two very winnable games, and then where are we? And then what position are we in? And a week later, a week or so later, it's massively changed for us and it's improved for Spurs. And there's going to be so many more twists and turns. I don't think it will just come down to the games against each other. I think, because I don't think the Spurs and Man United are that good a side to win all their games. I think they're both inconsistent. Don't get me wrong. The Spurs game's going to be intense. It wouldn't surprise me if we still did it. It wouldn't, because we've been consistent all season. I certainly haven't given up. I mean, the post-game against Brighton, you know, the old fears come back, but that's just what we've been conditioned to feel like, isn't it? That, you know, when you slip up against a team that you, on paper, you should beat, it's like, oh, you know, where's the next win coming from? We're shit. We've got nothing. Look at the whole season. We've been consistent. We've got the youngest squad, and the benefit of having a young squad is the ability to recover quickly and get over adversity, right? Because they haven't been through it yet. They haven't experienced this disappointment, you know, on a huge scale, on a, you know, high level that we're at now. So definitely all to play for. You know, in the stadium, like Mitch was alluding to, you know, the nervousness or the anxiety that you might feel, that's probably going to remain, because we're in a position where we all want Champions League so much, don't we? We all want it, you know, and you can kind of understand the stadium being a little bit anxious. But you live in hope that the lads can get over the line. Southampton's a winnable game, you know, so we just start again. And let's just get behind him and just, you know, not pay attention to all the twats on bloody social media.
We've just got to go for it now, haven't we? Until it's mathematically impossible, we've just got to just see it through every game. Right, we've got some emails. But first, Mitch, let me just ask you, are you still on board with Arteta and the side and everything, just to confirm for Joe Public out there?
I'm sorry?
Are you still on board with the project? The project?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
There you go. Just in case anyone's wondering. Right, we've got an email from John Kay. Quite an angry email. I'll leave out all the bleepy words. We need to get rid of Arteta. He's out of his depth, and it's people like you guys, us, that need to wake up and smell the coffee. Let's give Jay that one. Wake up and smell the coffee, Jay.
Look. If you, how many times have we said it? You know, if you can't, if you haven't been able to see improvement this season, then I'm not really sure what you're watching. You know, there was a reset in the summer. You can see that there was the move away from wasting money on, well, fading stars. You know, your ex-Chelsea's or whatever. And a project was started, and the Cronkies backed Edu and Mikel, and we started something in the summer. And I mean, if you can't see that there's been improvement, then I really don't know what you're watching. There's going to be slip-ups. This is the youngest squad. How many times have we read on social media or has it been said on the radio or on Sky Sports or whatever that this is the youngest squad in the Premier League, and we've fielded the youngest squad all through the season. There's going to be slip-ups. You can't please everyone. There are going to be people like that. There are also those people that have never backed Mikel, that wanted Ancelotti or wanted Mourinho or wanted, so you know, didn't want to go for this young, you know, this up-and-coming manager. I think it's just stupidness, absolutely ridiculous. If you can't see you're only feeding your own agenda for me. You're only trying to prove yourself to be right when you said at the start, Mikel wasn't the right man. I've said to you guys, I've doubted him. You know, there's been times since he took over that I have said, I'm not sure he's the right man, or he seems to, you know, the players aren't reacting to what he's, you know, he's tactically, or he can't motivate the players. And I have been, for myself, I held my hands up and said I was wrong, and I do believe he's the right man. However, still disappointed like everybody else when we lose against
the Palace. His face sold the story, didn't it, as well, after that game?
Yeah, I mean, he's not going to get sacked at the end of the day. Mikel is not going to get sacked. He's not going anywhere. You know, these people can cry all they want, put out threads on Twitter saying reasons why. He isn't going anywhere. You know, he's either going to have to walk or it's going to have to go catastrophically wrong for him to be sacked. Like, this is a long-term thing and people just need to get over it. You know, and ultimately, if we finish in the Champions League, I mean, if we get top four this season, there can be no more of this Arteta's not the right man. None of it. And I think even if we get in the Europa League, I think the majority of that rubbish just has to stop, because nobody expected us to be where we are. And we just need a reality check. Look at Man United. Look at United. They're just a shambles. And they've thrown so much money at that squad. And they've gone through the managers.
It's got to be £1 billion, isn't it? They've chucked at that.
And this is the right way. We wanted a new approach. We wanted investment in youth, and we wanted the youngsters, the HLN, the products of the of HLN. Len to be given a chance. And Mikel is the right man for it. It's just there are going to be bumps in the road. It's just inevitable.
Right, Julie's here. It's not Arteta's fault. The opposite side of the coin. The players are underperforming and need to take some responsibility. Agree with that, Mitch?
I don't. I think that the players and Arteta are at fault for certain things. Like I said, that I don't think Mikel made the right tactical decision against Brighton, and he probably takes responsibility. He takes responsibility for that. Players have clearly shown that they're not happy with having lost these two games. The players haven't been performing, but I don't think it's for lack of them taking responsibility. I don't think that they think that they're entitled to really anything. The Premier League is tougher than it's ever been right now. I don't think there's any guaranteed matches in the Premier League. Even Norwich beat Burnley this week and put a huge dent in Burnley's chances of survival. Anyone can beat anyone.
Yeah.
In the Premier League, this is a much different league than when Wenger took over Arsenal, or when George Graham took over Arsenal. Every single team in the Premier League has the ability to win every single week against anyone. And we're going to lose matches. We were guaranteed to drop points when we were in the driver's seat for top four. Just like Spurs will probably drop points by the end from here to the end of the season, especially when we have the youngest squad in the league. And to just kind of go back to the other question, I just want to echo what Jay said and just say, hey, what have you been watching this whole season? Mm. Come on.
I think it's as Jay said, it's agenda. It's agenda-driven. Yeah, he wasn't an Arteta fan, and he wants him out.
I just don't understand, at that point, you're a bigger fan of your own agenda than you are of their own team, yeah. And that's kind of depressing. That's just a sad way to live. People that are mad when we win and happy when we lose. And are you even an Arsenal fan if you're wanting to lose? You're right.
I just want to add, we all know, Mikel's an inexperienced manager, right? But we all know that, right? But let's say in a completely different world, God forbid, but it was Jose Mourinho that was managing Arsenal, and we were in this exact same position where we are now.
I would not be here right now. I would have lost my interest entirely, and I'd stopped paying attention.
A lot of these people on social media wouldn't be saying this. It's just because he's inexperienced, and it's an easy thing to criticize him about. Oh, he's not the right man, you know. But he's done so much, and he's improved players, and he's improved the relationship between the players and the fans. He's got the fans engaged again. You know, we've said before, haven't we, just how, you know, before Mikel took over, it was the Emirates was a graveyard. It was just, you know, home and away, atmosphere was poor. There were so many players that you didn't really like. And he's changed all that. And he's changed the mentality, I think, of the club. And we're moving in the right direction. And I just think because he's inexperienced, it's just easy for people just to react when we lose by saying, oh, get him out. You know, whereas if a slightly more experienced manager was managing the team and we were in the exact same position, they wouldn't be saying that. They'd be saying we're doing well and we're moving in the right direction, you know?
What are we doing wrong, the three of us, where we have so many Arteta out people emailing us?
I think it's me, because I've sort of hooked up with various Arsenal supporters, and I've got the really supportive ones, the ones that say, you know, Arsenal till I die, win, lose or draw. And there's plenty of them, and there's a small percentage. But unfortunately, we get the emails off the percentage because they want to hear what we say about it, or they want to hear their name. And I think it's very much that. They want to hear us promote their name. So, John, you're sad. Right. OK, so we look forward to your next email, but you are sad, probably. Sat there, I won't say what I was going to say. I've just self-edited what I was going to say. Right, the last of the emails. Unusual name, Stenk B. Stenkby. I don't know whether that's short for something or it's a real name. Edu and Cronkies should hold their hands up. They fell short by a few crucial signings, and the failure to secure a top striker is starting to bite.
Okay.
Mitch.
Who do we... We go back to January. Who do we sign? What striker do we sign? We didn't give Vlahovic. We did everything in our power that we possibly could give Vlahovic. He was the one signing that we deemed good enough to have spent that kind of money that was available in January. Who do we sign? You want Alvaro Morata? Do you think Alvaro Morata is going to be better than what Lacazette's providing right now? No. No, he's not. There's no way.
He's getting angry, Jay. Have you seen him? He's getting angry.
More frustrated if it was Alvaro Morata. Apparently, we went in for Darwin Nunez. That was a good move to try to do that. Benfica didn't want to sell. All right, great. We attempted to do that. We weren't willing to pay $75 million for Alexander Isak. Probably a good choice. He hasn't scored much this season. We may be in the same boat and down $75 million. Like, I don't think that there was many good options. Like, yeah, could we have maybe brought in someone like Jovic from Real Madrid on loan? Yeah, maybe. But, like, there was not many. Like, the January window is tough for purchases or anything. And it's kind of like this narrative that just doesn't really exist.
Just to add to what Mitch just said, I think it's made work. Mikel could never have predicted Lacazette wasn't going to score or not even take a shot. You know, there's no chance. There's no way he would have thought it. Our goals from a striking or centre forward position would have gone this downhill. You know, like nobody could have predicted that. You know, like, I mean, Lacazette, you know, his goals have dried up in the last couple of seasons, but he's never been this bad. He's not taking shots. You know, I'm torn on this one because I kind of think that you can go and buy someone if you've got the cash. You're going to have to pay over the odds. You are going to do that. And obviously, we've got ourselves into a position where Champions League's a reality. If we go and get a striker, maybe that will be the difference. And ultimately, hindsight, I know it's a wonderful thing and all of that, but it could cost us not having a striker.
There was no sure things in the January window that we could have gotten at. Like, a lot of people can point at Alexander Isak, we could have got him. But if we paid $75 million for Isak and he didn't hit the ground running, or he just wasn't worth that, then we're in way bigger trouble. Like, we can compare ourselves to Tottenham, but we're in very different positions to Tottenham. Like, Tottenham made two good signings during January, and they're helping them a lot now. But we're in a very different position because their win now, we're in a project. We don't need to panic buy in January because we might hit top four, because top four puts us ahead of schedule. We don't need to get top four this season for the progress for this project to have progressed. We didn't need to panic buy. Spurs needed to panic buy because Conte has never been in a job more than 3 years. Harry Kane wanted to leave last summer. You better prove that Harry Kane should stay longer than just this season. You better prove to Heung-min Son that he should stay at the club. You better prove to all of these players and to your own manager that you're willing to back them and that you have to do it this season. Arsenal didn't have to do that. We had the luxury to be able to not panic buy. Both of Spurs signings seem to be working out for them in the short term. There was does not mean that any purchase that we made during that window would have been a sure thing at all. There's no guarantees.
No, nobody could have foreseen just how badly Lacazette it would have gone as well. No,
absolutely that as well. Like, if there was a player, like, let's say Brentford were willing to move on from Tony in January, that's a signing that I think that we could, like, potentially would have thought about maybe overpaying, because that's a Premier League striker moving to a Premier League club. There was one Premier League striker that moved clubs. It was Chris Wood. Do we think Chris Wood is the striker to get us to the Champions League? No, he wasn't. Is he an upgrade for what Newcastle had? Yeah, but, like, he's not going to be an upgrade over what Arsenal had. So there was no options that were going to be any sort of guarantee. And there's also no predicting that Lacazette would be this poor of a level. I'm interested to see what we do with the striker position from here forward. I'd love to see Eddie start this weekend. Well, I'd love to see Martinelli. I don't think we will. I think every fan wants to see Martinelli at striker. I don't think we see Martinelli at striker. I just don't think that happens anytime soon.
I think with those performance, that performance last game out, Nketiah has virtually prized that door open. He's got his leg through there. I am going to stick my head on the block and say that he's going to start next time out just to add a new dimension, some legs, some speed, some energy, because at that top end, you've got the side sorted out. You've got the flanks. You've got Martinelli. You've got Saka. But Lacazette, again, as Jay said, too deep. And if the ball is played in front of him, he hasn't got the legs to get there. So I'm for Nketiah starting, although I'm not a big fan. I think we need something different. We need a bit of a shake-up. And he has done really well the last couple of games. Lads, we've got a couple of bits just before we go. It's transfer rumours in six words or less. I know you love this bit. And by the way, John, you're still sad. I just thought I'd throw that in again.
Real quick, that's something to say. Hey, John, you're sad? All right,
you can go. So I might get a shirt with John, you're sad on it. That might be good. That'll bump up the listening and viewing figures, won't it? Gabriel to Barcelona, Jay. Sniffing around, quite interested.
No. He's, don't get me wrong, his position's not absolutely guaranteed, is it? But he's done well this season. And he's, we invested a lot of money in him a little while back, and you know he's part of the project, isn't he? And he's, you know, with when Saliba comes back next season, it'll be Gabriel, Saliba, and Ben White, you know, challenging and gives us good depth at centre half.
Can Barcelona even afford him? I mean, they're hemorrhaging money like it's going out of fashion. They're about £1 billion more, in debt, aren't they?
Not anymore, apparently, because they're linked with everyone. Mm. But my thoughts on this is, for the right price, I think most players in the squad have a price. If Barcelona offered 60, 70...
Oh, yeah. That,
I'm thinking that.
Yeah, yeah. That's
50, I don't know. But I there's a lot of people that are very negative about Gabriel, and I just don't see why. Like, he's been a little bit erratic at times. He's made some poor decisions at times. But he is such a good physical profile, and he's 23 years old. Forming a really good partnership that, like, works really nicely with Ben White. And then also, like, center backs don't even like peak until like way later in their careers. To compare someone like Gabriel to Mustafi, which I saw on Twitter today, someone comparing Gabriel to Mustafi, is ludicrous to me, because not only is that just so unfair to Gabriel, like, not, he has never been anything remotely close to what Mustafi was. He's also so young and is able to, like, his issues stem from just like some erraticism and some poor decision making that can be very easily improved.
Just switching off from time to time, isn't it?
Necessarily, just like the physical ability and the physical profile that Gabriel brings. Like, he's like a really talented player at 23 years old. Can you imagine the player he's going to be when he's like in his prime? And I think it'd be foolish to just like throw him by the wayside. Oh, Saliba's coming back. Like, yeah, there's strength in having depth, having a group of three really good center backs, especially with Europe next season. It's going to be really important. So for the right price, I would sell Gabriel. I don't think 50 million is that.
So we had for the right price, and there was about five no's from Jay. I just think it's a rubbish story. I just totally do. Next one up, Mitch, you deal with this first. Richarlison to Arsenal from Everton.
I'd rather the other Everton striker. I'd rather have Calvert-Lewin, probably, if I had to have an Everton striker. But really? Neither of them were my first choice for a striker. However, if Everton go down, I would be happy to just go in for a bunch of cheap prices for some talented players.
What about you, Jay? What's your six words or less on Richarlison?
At the right price. Yeah, he's a good player, but I wouldn't want to pay too much for him. You know, he's decent. Like he's proved that, you know, he can play and be consistent in the Premier League. But you wouldn't want to pay too much for him, you know, because he's not exactly what we need, is he? You know, he's more like a wide man, and we've got plenty of them. You know, he's decent though. Don't get me wrong. If it happened, I'd be pleased, but only if we got him on the cheap.
Right, this one to both of you, Eden Zamata from Olympiacos.
I need you to stop making up players.
I can say never heard of him.
Yeah, well, I did get
I'm never. I'm not gonna. I'm
you've
not
gonna football manager.
I'm not gonna pretend I know who he is, because when I do, and maybe I will at some point, he's gonna be a fake player, and that's what you're gonna get me. I'm not gonna
lie. Yeah, well, you've been playing football manager. I mean, taking these players out.
Listen to the name again.
2040, and he's like, "Oh, here's a player. I'm going to link in our next podcast episode."
Listen to the name again. Eden Zamata. He doesn't matter. Olympiacos. I tried to catch you out. It didn't work. Right. He's beat me. Right. We've got one more bit left. I got an email saying there are three traitors from previous years, and they've sent me a list of three traitors that they see in their opinion. Adebayor, Ashley Cole, and Robin Van Persie. Which one of those three would you put into the current Arsenal side and why?
Van Persie, because we need a striker and he was really good.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
Yeah, see, I
never have Ashley Cole back. Never. Never in a million years can you have
him
back.
Though we're a bit thin on the left.
No, thanks. Rather have Andre Santos. No chance.
We do need the goals. Van Persie, for all his faults and his warts and everything else, at least he brought the goals to us. And the shame was, when he left us to go to United, he'd been injured for... We had one good season out of him, haven't we, really? And he buggered off over there and won the Premier League. Right then. That is us for now. Let's have a little bit of a look forward to the Southampton game and have some predictions. Let's try and rein it back, because our predictions have been nothing short of shit, have they really? Jay, what's your prediction? Go easy. Go back to your half full, half empty thing.
I think we're going to, like I said earlier, I think we're going to see a reaction. Just got to win, and we've just got to try and find a win, haven't we? Just got to try and get 3 points somehow. You know, they've just been smashed, haven't they, by Chelsea? So, I don't know. 2-1, win. Not going to be pretty. Maybe just scrape a win. Fingers crossed, you know.
Mitch?
I mean, once again, it's a tough match, tough away match. I mean, they're a good team, despite what happened last week. And there's a reason I don't do predictions, and it's because I'm so biased. You can ask me for a prediction from now to the end of the season, and every single time I'm going to say we're going to win, despite the fact that that's not true. I'm never going to come onto this podcast and be like, unless we get in a run of bad form bad enough where I'm the month of November last season depressed about Arsenal. I'm never going to predict the loss.
You've said this before, though, Tom. This is the youth talking. This is somebody who hasn't been scarred time after time after time,
year after year.
Bitter disappointment of being let down.
It's the same reason I don't gamble. It's because, especially on, I would never do a sports gamble on a team I'm a fan of, because I'm never going to, if I bet against my team, then I'm rooting against my own team, and I'm not going to do that. But I'm also never going to bet against my own team, because I always think we're going to win. So I'm just too biased to do anything like this.
Right, Mitch, get off that fence. It must be sticking in your ass by now. What are you going to go for?
7-0 win.
7-0 win. Very ambitious. I will go for just the bare minimum. I'll settle for 1-0. And I don't care if it goes off someone's shin, arse, or ear. Nice. That's it from us. Thanks, chaps. Once again, let's hopefully get it on for the next one, and we'll turn over a really good result. Thanks for your efforts, your input, and everything else. And I'll see you on the next one.
You're sad, John.
Yeah,
John, you are mega, mega sad. And we've all said that. He's going to be in touch. Bet your life.
John's a daddo. Hashtag.
See you later.
It's an Arsenal thing. It's an Arsenal thing. Believe it or not, it's an Arsenal thing. With football and transfers, you know who you'll bring. You're listening to It's an Arsenal thing.
Trials to shorten football matches to 60 minutes could begin as early as this month. According to the Portuguese Football Federation, or the FPF, they want to trial the format for the Under-23 Revelations Cup. Halves would be reduced to 30 minutes with the clock only running while the ball is in play. A similar system to what is currently used in rugby. Did you know that Ian Wright recorded a song called Do It Right in 1993, co-written by Chris Lowe, one of the Pet Shop Boys? Dave has been digging around in the media vaults to find this audio treat.
You're out your mind by leaving swing. You're at the strength. Do the right thing. Giving up, easy to do, when the world keeps spinning and you can't get through. Don't let it throw you or change your mind. You may not get that chance next time. I've done it once, I'll do it twice. My commitment's high, I'll pay the price. For wanting things that can only be found when you're on the line. But your feet inside. You're out your mind by losing faith. You'll have the strength to do the right thing. You're out your mind by losing faith. You'll have the strength to do the right thing. The world's watching. You have to stand.
peace.
Well, Wrexham fans have certainly taken to their new owner, Hollywood film star and pin-up Ryan Reynolds, and have even started singing about him. And that got me and Dave thinking, now who could we draft in to change the Arsenal landscape? Someone who can do lots, someone who can create miracles. Who's that going to be? Well, according to him, it's Idris Elba. Listen to this.
I'm Idris Elba. Motherfucking
I'm a major factor, DJ, dancer, writer, actor. I do it all.
What's that?
Got a problem with your back, love? I'm a registered chiropractor. Got a farm, I could drive a tractor. I can do anything I turn my hand to. Cage fighting, hang gliding, ironing. I've even got a cure for surviving cancer. Barista, fashionista, street sweeper, goalkeeper, primary school teacher, stockbroker, spiritual healer, estate agent. Wanna buy a house in Ibiza? Wanna work permit? Want a visa? You need CPR? You had a seizure? You wanna buy a new car? You want a dealer? You want cats? I'm the geezer.
That's it. We're all done here. Thanks to the podcasters known as Silent Dave. You can find him on Twitter, SilentDave101. Jay is also there as the Bald Gooner. You can find Mitch as Mitch Piotta. Don't forget to check out his blogs at The Arse Review. Shout outs to Brandon Murphy and all the folks at arsedevils.com. Don't forget to check us out on Facebook and Twitter. Like and follow the audio version and subscribe to the YouTube version of the show. Missing Isaiah, an American arsonology? Well, you don't have to. Look him up on Twitter. A Arsonology for 30 minutes or less match reviews delivered with a combination of quirk and music. Thanks to you once again for your continuing support. Please like and follow the podcast, whether you look or listen. And finally, remember one thing. North London is most certainly red.
Kiss your face. Turn your cheek. Lay your head down. Lay your head down. Lay your head down. Lay your head down.
Dreams we forget.